אנחנו קוראים בספר כתבי בעל הסולם בעמוד 718 מתוך איגרת.
We're reading from the letters, letter 26, where at the bottom line it is written, you can ask questions and selected questions will be live. The book of Bala, the writings of בעל הסולם, reading in beginning with it is written. It is written, if for the clowns he will just jest, and to the humble he will give grace. I will begin with an allegory, perhaps you understand. A great benevolent king, that all of his aim was only to benefit the citizens of his country, since he required no labor from them, but all his desire was to give pleasure to his citizens. Indeed, he knew that there were degrees in the receivers of his benevolence, in the degree of their love for him, and the degree of their recognition of his esteem. And he desired to give untold pleasures to those worthy of his subjects. And the rest of the people will see that the king does not save on those who show love for him, but rather that he satisfies them with his abundant pleasures that he has prepared for them. And in addition to the pleasures that he gives them generously, they have a special pleasure in that they feel chosen from all the rest. And that too the king wanted to give to his beloved. And in order to guard from the complaint of the people, since they might lie or will deceive themselves to say that they too love the king, and still they were not rewarded, and because the king was perfect, he guarded himself from that as well, and came out with a plan to execute his thoughts perfectly. And he came up with a wonderful counsel. He decreed that all the subjects of his state should come for a full year to serve the king, and he designated a special place in his palace for that. And he conditioned clearly that no one should work outside of the designated place, because it is forbidden and undesirable in the eyes of the king. And their reward shall be given to them in the place of their work. He made them great feasts, full of all the delicacies of the world, whenever they wanted. And after the year of work, he will invite everyone to the king's table, and they will be seen sitting with royalty. And the proclamation went out, and everyone came to the king's city that was surrounded with a wall and an army, since they were closed there for the year. And the work began, and all thought that the king was watching over them to see who is serving him and who is not. In truth, the king was hiding, and there was no guidance, and each will do according to his eyes. This is how it seemed to them. And they did not know that of his wonderful invention, that he placed a sort of evil powder in the delicacies, and opposite it, he placed a healing powder in the place of work. And by that, the providence was clarified by itself, because his true loyal lovers, even though they saw that there was no providence in that place, they nonetheless kept the commandments of the king to the letter due to their love to the king. And they did everything as they were told. And also they made sure to work only in the designated place. And by that, they inhaled into their body the healing powder. And even when it came time to eat, they tasted the delicacies and the sweets, and they contained 1,000 flavors, and they never felt such flavors and such sweetness. Therefore, they praised the king very much, because it was on his table that they were eating those praised foods. However, the lower ones who do not understand at all the degree of the king, that because of this it is worthwhile to love him with dedicated and loyal love, because they saw that there was no providence, They did not adhere to the king's decrees as they should, and they didn't care to work in the designated place, and each one did his place in the place that he saw fit in the king's courts. And when the time of eating came, since they've tasted the delicacies, their palate was filled with a bitter taste because of that powder. And they disgraced and cursed and contempt and scorned the king and the contemptible table that he made for them in reward for their work. And for them, the king was considered a great liar, since instead of the delicacies and the sweets of the world, he gave them these bitter and sour foods. And because of that, they started buying other foods from the city market in order to break their hunger. And then their sorrow was multiplied because now their work was increased and they did not enjoy the king's table that was set before them. And the allegory is that the Torah is divided into two parts. One part for serving the Creator, like the tefillin, the shofar, the horn, and the standing of the Torah, and part for serving the creatures, for the relationship of the creatures, like staying away from robbing, keeping your souls, not cheating anyone, keeping clean, etc. And it is the part that between man and his friend that is the true work, and the part that is between man and his and the Creator is actually the reward and the delicacies set on the king's table. Indeed, all that the Creator did, he did for him, since the part of serving the creatures should also be done in the king's place, meaning to raise divinity from the dust. And in that, there is a healing powder for the potion of death that is between man and the place, and the Creator. And this is a secret of, and he shall give grace to the humble. In the Torah and mitzvot that are between a man and his friend, and between a man and the Creator. For those who love him and keep his mitzvot, his precepts, to make them work always at the designated place, so that they get the grace of sanctity. And they shall inherit their land, because in addition that they are not working so much, being enslaved to other people, they are also immersed in pleasure for their entire lives in the grace of the Lord. But to the scornful, he'll joke, etc. And they say that the king's table is contemptible, etc., because they feel sanctity like jokery. And if so, the wicked do not reward any, get any reward for their wickedness. Therefore, who can lose any of that if they retire away from it, even at the time of hoping to find some grace? Yehuda Leib.
Dugma mod yefa.
Very good example. When we are in a state where the Creator doesn't need to supervise, that's why it is said that the light is at complete rest. And what a person does is he corrects his own vessels, and accordingly he discovers his relation to the Creator, at what state he is in relation to the Creator, what is the reason for what the Creator orchestrated for him. And there's no some payment and later reward, but the changes that happen in the person in accordance with the light that is still hidden from him, these changes, they are the payments themselves. To the extent that he tastes the existing world as dust, or he begins to taste it better and better and make all kinds of discernments, obviously some unpleasant ones as well, which direct him to approach revelation. However, on the whole, he has to discover his correction. Because there's nothing to discover with in terms of the Creator. He's not hidden. We hide him with our own vessels to the extent that we correct what's hidden in the vessels due to their lack of sensitivity, then it appears. So people who misunderstand this, they don't work on correcting the vessels or forget about it, and simply cry, where is the Creator to be revealed? People who understand this, they don't have a question of waiting for something, rather do it and get it according to the equivalence of form. It appears there's no prevention from above or concealment from above. The way we explain it in our words, yes, but in fact, all the preventions or concealments are within the person. So if we aim ourselves correctly towards this, we also realize that our prayer should be help, support, self-examination, aid from others towards me and to the others. If there's none else besides him, and he is good that does good, I, the Lord, do not change as a law that can't be changed, then it turns out that there's no one to address or no one to wait for. It's only between us and from us. And stabilizing ourselves correctly here, although the words are very confusing to us. The Torah talks in a way that can really be interpreted in many different facets, both in the language of reception and in the language of bestowal. So, once the person understands it correctly, he realizes that he is in an environment, and these are the changing data, and all the rest, all the other discernments don't change. And only by changing both respectively, he can't change himself only by the environment. The environment cannot change by itself only with his help. There he finds the ability to advance and discover the true state that he himself is hiding through his broken vessels, hiding from himself. That's that. But the feast is there, the dust is also there, the person is there, and everything is ready for the meal. It just seems to us repulsive at this point, and it all depends on correcting our senses.
Pasha from Moscow says, "In the article, it is
Pasha from Moscow is saying, in the article, it says that the people in his state are kosher. What does it mean?
Ready for work. have an awakening. That's why he invited them. Later, otherwise we will come. But you see that many people in the world wake up, and many of them wake up and leave. They come to the table and then they say, well, I don't know, I think I'm going to eat from another table. And then they go searching for the meaning of life or pleasures in all kinds of places, until they realize that perhaps the table seems beautiful, full of scents and flavors and delights. But when they start tasting it, they see that it's really only on the outside, and in fact, you know, tastes like plastic. On the outside, everything is shiny and glittering, you know how they make stuff today. And then, after these great detours, they come back. They will, but for now, that's how it is. And only those who cling to the table and say there's no choice, we have to correct ourselves so that this powder becomes delicious. And that is the work we have to do, so that the intention to receive will become the intention to bestow, and then the pleasures will be complete nanchai.
A student from Toronto, Canada, and also Timur from Istanbul are asking, what does it mean to purify your perception?
Well, purifying your perception is perhaps, well, the way I understand this is that I begin to see that the Creator fills up the world with good that does good of His own nature. And other than that, I discover gradually that there's nothing, that we too are immersed in that, as if drowning in that. And then what's left between us and Him is only that discernment that makes the distinction between us, which is called adhesion, that we feel that we are in adhesion. You understand? It's not a separative distinction, but it just provides that sort of feeling, because without that, you disappear. So I just want that to not disappear. And that's called to purify the perception, or to describe this state. That's how I think.
A student from Toronto is asking, how should I recognize what exactly requires treatment, healing?
We learn that from what Kabbalists tell us, that all corrections must happen between humans. First phase, don't do to your friend what you hate to be done to you, rising above the ego. Second phase, love thy friend as thyself, where you even invert the ego, correct it so you turn one's enemy to one's lover, which is Malchut rising to Bina and then to Ketel, to the bestower, the giver. These corrections can't happen in all our life, everything we have in this world. It's just impossible for a beginner. That's why we have to practice them in the group. But to apply them there, we have to realize that we have no other place to do it, and not to escape that. Usually we agree to do all kinds of works, studying, disseminating, whatever you say. Besides constantly examining my relation to the friends. That, you know, we somehow study about it, talk about it a lot, but are we practicing it? Do we see our progress there? Do we measure our spiritual progress by that? That's a problem.
We talked about turning his lover to his beloved, and Martin Formiga is asking, how do I prepare myself correctly if I feel anger towards a friend? How to rise above that?
If we always had an understanding and importance, a grasp that we are facing the Creator here, and the group stands between us, between me and Him, and it presents to me, the group presents to me my attitude to the Creator, so that I identify better what I need to correct. That there's even no reality of the group. There's no entity per se. It's just my broken part that is found in front of me, so that in this perception of reality, I better see, I better realize that this is broken. I see that part outside of me. I hate that part. And now I have to shift that hatred, that rejection to love. It's either I correct my relation to others, or I bring the others into myself. It's the same. Thus, I bring all the parts of my soul back into me that are seemingly outside of me. It's just like what we learn from the preface to the Book of Zohar about what Baal HaSulam calls the photographic machine. So he says there how thankful we should be to the Creator that He built this kind of perception within us that we think it's outside of us. Because if it were within me, I wouldn't be able to hate it. Now my entire work is to imagine that it is within me and I hate it. So instead of telling me, try to hate your ego, I'm told, love the others. It's the same thing. It's just in a way that I can do it. If I would have to try to hate myself, I would destroy myself. And besides that, I would become fanatic. Which is what we see in some religions that drive people towards suffering, or like the Indians do, self-mortifications, or other methods that practice various torments and limitations. We cannot advance that way. Therefore, instead of hating my own evil qualities, I was given the same thing in the opposite way, loving the others. Well, I see that we, after all, can speak about a few more steps here, a few more discernments.
From Chicago, we have the question, what is the difference between correction and overcoming?
Correction is made only by the upper force. Overcoming, there are several aspects of it, until I reach a point where I as if draw the upper light, the upper force that corrects me. This is the overcoming. The overcoming is to make the request to raise mon, and the correction is no longer in our hands. Yes.
A student from overseas is asking, why are we being punished when we try to correct our attitude to the others?
Punished?
Yes.
There is no punishment. There's only revelation of your own evil. But it's no punishment. It's actually the opposite, I would say, a great reward. Because now I realize what makes the difference between me and the Creator. Why is it punishment? If you want to be paid, and you're brought to a job where you say, you're told, do this, and you'll get, I don't know, this huge reward. So that's punishment? It all depends on the importance of the reward. Yes. He's older than you. What do you want? And he's more presentable. Yes.
The article as a whole, well, you can understand it. You can understand it. You explain it, so certainly we can understand it. But it seems to me that the very final verse is concealed and unclear.
He writes, read it, yeah.
He says, but he shall jest with the scornful, and they say that the king's table is despicable because they feel the shame like jokery. Just therefore, the wicked do not earn through their wickedness, and who can lose anything if it is retires from them, even at the time of hoping to find this grace? I read it a few times. I don't understand what he's saying.
Well, look, Barsalam writes about this in a different letter, that millions of people throughout history have poured their blood, shed their blood, and gave their strength to find some taste in the slavery for the Creator and find the owner of the land. And, you know, he writes these beautiful words, and they didn't discover the Creator. They said that the Creator is just hidden and lofty, and who can even merit such a thing, and so on. This he writes in a different place. And this is what people think. Their mistake is a simple one. They cannot give up the reward. Very simple. Where is he? What is he? Where is what I deserve, you know? This is the respect their person looks for. I made such an effort. Where is this? Our reward is in truth respect. And if one gives it up and says, actually, the opposite, it's good, it's great. The Creator guarded me from receiving anything. That's great luck. And from now on also, I don't want to receive anything, nothing. Just make sure, keep me guarded so I don't receive anything. If that's the way he turns, then he already advances properly. So those fools, they don't understand, they don't discover that point, that beyond this condition lies the great reward. And that reward, well, it's a sort of a psychological inversion, that this reward is beyond the restriction point. Yes, let Itzik. Ah, it's Vika, well. He says that the lesson learned is that Torah divides into two parts, the part for the slavery of towards the Creator, like the Tefillin, Shofar, and Torah, and then the part for the enslavement for the created beings. And then he writes about robbery and theft and so on. What does he talk about? What is it?
Well, you're saying that.
I'm saying he puts together all of the three sentences together.
I didn't receive an explanation for that from my teacher. I mean,
what do you mean? Why did he divide the Torah into two parts? This is what he writes here.
Well, it's written about that in the Torah itself also. There is the Torah of the landlords, and the Torah of the wise, the sages, and the reason, the opinion of Torah is opposite the one of the landlords. So what do you want? There is this Torah and that Torah. As we say, there is the 99%, and there is the 1%.
So according to what we learn here, I see that this whole part of Tefillin, Shofar, and study of Torah, we don't need it.
I don't know. I mean, all of those things are very high degrees. He's saying the Shofar, let's say the horn of the Messiah, that's the dissemination of the wisdom of Kalabara all over the world. So it's the knowledge of the Lord that is revealed in all the parts of the collective soul. Do you know what kind of a high degree it is, spiritual degree? This is something. That's the Torah, Tefillin. The Tefillin is the illumination of Chochmah that is revealed. We have that in Ari Hanpin, Tefillin. We have in Abba, we have Tefillin, and in Ima, we have Tefillin. That's the illumination of Chochmah. And also in Zeranpin, we have the Tefillin. So those are such corrections that, you know, go read in the Ari, the Ta'amei Mitzvot, the flavors of the precepts, and read about what he says there, what degrees these are. So I don't know what he means here. I mean, but this is what we have to reach. What our forefathers have reached, what the Ari is writing about, that's what we have to reach. That's all. Now, there is the reason, the opinion of the landlords, that they believe that it's enough for us maybe to just to put on the tefillin and all of that. But the Creator is not awakening them for the time being towards all the other actions that are more internal. So you can't do anything with them. Just demand it from yourself.
This I need to understand. Just one concept, if you can help explain that. He writes the enslavement towards the place or the Creator, such as Tefillin, Shofar, and the study of Torah. He writes it for a reason, so what does it mean? Then he writes the enslavement towards the created beings is the true work, and the part between man and the Creator is the reward and delights that are spread on the table of the king. So why does he divide it to two parts here, he writes, and what is it?
I don't know yet. Let's hope that we will know. Why are you looking at me like that? There are things that I don't yet, where I can't yet go all to the full depth of what he has in mind. Let's say, should I say just something that comes to me, you know, just pops up in me? No, I don't want to do that. I want to study what belongs to me. and not, you know, this person could see far away to all, any distances. He would speak to all people in general. Let us just scrutinize something that belongs to us. As we advance more, we'll understand a bit more. As we advance even more, we'll understand even more.
Why? You see this as inner work and external work.
Sir, you may see that, but I don't see it.
And it's obvious.
If you want to try and get something from me that I want to give it to you, I'm not going to give it to you. It's not going to help. And maybe you're not yet worthy of hearing this. Yes, Louis.
Yesterday there was the day of love.
Yeah, and today it's over, right?
Yeah, today it's over. We can officially stop loving. No, it was a milestone in the world. It was this hallmark. So, you know, people spoke about it in the world.
But what is love? What does it mean, love?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. The definitions of love have very much changed. We're talking about here, about love of friends and reaching love. How do I know I'm on the right track?
Well, first of all, in the world, does the definition of love, the concept of love, change?
What do you mean by change?
Well, does it change? I mean, once they thought that love means to be like a pair of pigeons. Truly, they spend their whole life like that, looking at one another. Right? They sit together and they look at one another. Later, I don't know. Nowadays, I think
today it's just no one believes that it exists. That's it.
Because it truly does not exist. Indeed, the concept of love, as it was formed by all kinds of people who kind of lost their mind, it doesn't exist because it's not in human nature. Well, we have concern, we have dependency, but not what they have defined as love. Love is a consequence from a deep reciprocal connection, which is for a very important goal. Because a person must always see something before him that, if you know, pulls him forward, and by that he can be filled up. We are built in such a way that if we stop being filled up, if the goal is in us, it is simply erased. I received what I wanted. Let's say I have all the money in the world. Can I enjoy? No, I can't. Why? Because what would I enjoy? I have no deficiency. Therefore, like in places like Scandinavia, you know, people hang themselves. Or in all kinds of other developed countries, there people are in despair, they use drugs. I need a deficiency. Well, no, if I'm constantly in a deficiency, then I'm going to be suffering, like in Africa or some place where people don't have anything. So there has to be the wisdom of Kabbalah, the wisdom of fulfillment, and it's not simple. And it's something necessary. It's not that the Creator is toying with us. Rather, the bestowing force that created something outside of it that can enjoy, He has to build it as opposite of itself. And what is opposite of itself is, you know, by necessity, this oppositeness, it has to first be completely opposite, and it also has to match, to be in adhesion. So the entire wisdom of Kabbalah is the wisdom of how the created being can receive so that he is in non-stop pleasure, internal pleasure. And then it ends up that necessarily, how can I be in, I can be in that eternal pleasure if I do it in order to bestow contentment upon him. Otherwise, I won't enjoy in a constant, eternal manner. I have to, it has to be that way. You don't discern those things yet, but they have to be such by necessity, out of lack of choice. If you try to build it, you will have to build it this way, if you have the right reason. So, if we're speaking about love, and it's the same as our connection with the Creator, there we speak of love as well. So, it's a constant connection that gives constant pleasure between two and forever. So, without the wisdom of Kabbalah, you cannot build such a thing. It's truly, there has to be great wisdom in that. And it's not just that a girl and a boy meet and, you know, we're going to love each other for to the end of our lives. Well, till tomorrow.
I actually want to relate to this field of work that you just spoke about here in the article. We're also talking about the group, our love towards the friends. How do I know that it's really coming from the right place, that I have the right relation to them, and I don't stay in that place of, you know, I feel good here, comfortable, convenient?
I want that to be as well. Why not?
Because eventually I want to reach the Creator. I don't want to just stick with this all my life.
Well, rise above the comfort that you have in this place, the convenience to the extent that you can, and to the extent that you can't, then that whatever is here won't throw you to the outside.
So what's the difference if I sit here or if I sit in some football fans club or something like that?
Because here you have the possibility to achieve more than there, if you want.
So it's egoistic. I'm in the same vicious cycle.
Well, that's how everybody reaches there. What can you do about it?
We want to come out of it.
Well, go ahead, but why do you want to create, you know, bad conditions? So that they'll
I'm not saying bad.
So they'll obligate you?
I'm not saying bad conditions, but I came here from some desire first to just receive more. Then I realized that I work incorrectly, and I want to start working correctly.
Yes, I remember you, yeah. Some, you know, Tel Aviv guy, you know, juicy. So?
Great. So now a lot of juice came out, was squeezed out of that juicy thing, and I want to direct myself correctly through the group.
So?
How do I not fall to that place where everything I do is just for me to be more comfortable, to be liked by them?
It's your inner work. What do you want? You want us to do it in your stead? You know, tell me what to do.
You tell me what to do.
There are the Rabash articles about the society. You should read them and try to keep them. And also you have the friends who are exactly in the same state as you are. So, you know, agree with them that they will help. They will help you. I think that you should... we once read... a letter, not a letter, Ramchal, not a letter, the code of conduct. And that's a group that existed 600 years ago in Padova in Italy. And it wrote a code of conduct for itself. You can read it in Hebrew, there's this book, and it says the following. And the statute that they wrote was that every 4 hours, every couple, every pair, they switch every few hours. I'm not sure about how many hours. And they would read the Zohar. So that for 24 hours, you know, they would go through that. In 24 hours. So make it so that you'll establish all over the world, each time a different group or some part of the group. Well, not this whole group, because we have 300 people here. Our groups in Israel are also additional thousands. Our groups in the world are, you know, could be hundreds of thousands, of tens of thousands, and also the individuals. Let's first make a list. Make a list. We need to open some place. Where is Shimon? Oh, suddenly you switch to the left line. Okay. So we'll open up some place where each one can sign himself up there, and he'll also write in parentheses to what group he belongs, right? So the name, first name, last name, place, and what group he belongs to. Maybe he's one in one place and he belongs to another group. I live somewhere in, you know, I live in Brisbane and I belong to the, I live, sorry, in one place and I belong to the Toronto group. And later, after a week or two, when everybody signs up, we'll see how to divide them up. And we'll have shifts, you know, all go all around the world. And during his shift, a person has to, you know, he owes it to everyone. It's not going to be just one person. There would be at least a few, but at least in the hope that each one is, you know, is doing it at least at one time. You know, we'll rotate, thinking about how to hold the group in the spiritual state. So even if you don't have the intention at that time, they will have the intention. I'll tell you. What you say, well, there's only one problem here, that we, during several minutes a day, we are in a spiritual action, but that's it.
This is actually the feeling that sometimes you can feel it, but you can't hold on to it. And the question is, how do we create that state of love of friends that is directed at the Creator as a permanent state, that I'm always in it, that I begin to discern that every action I make is in the right workplace?
That is called the influence of the environment over the person. If you build such an environment that will affect him, that is his entire choice. You have nothing else to do in your life. All the other things are being dictated for you from above, or you don't know where from. It doesn't depend on you. What depends on you is only how to organize the environment that would influence you and would direct you towards the goal. And that's it. So I just suggested some idea. Go ahead and make some others. Suggest, you know. But the main thing is that the atmosphere, the air has to be dense, that it would obligate you from within, because there is this connection between everyone, but the connection is negative, because if nobody is thinking about the goal, then you, you know, weaken as well. Maybe by yourself you would awaken. Maybe even if you would awaken by yourself, sorry.
I have a question following the friends who spoke about love. Everyone describes spirituality differently towards the Creator.
Yes.
Now, where do we connect? Where is that love? Where is that connection? Where is that place where we truly connect and sort of...
Between us.
But everyone sees it differently. Everyone directs himself in a different way.
That doesn't matter. Between us, in the end, we feel that shared place, and that shared place, we beget it. It's like our shared, like a shared baby. And if in that place we discover the sharing, the accumulation of our individual forces that come together to some degree into one, into a single force, a single area, there immediately we feel the Creator. The Creator is the outcome, the consequence of the shared force that we create. Where does it say that you made me?
Huh?
We read it in the preparation? Ah, okay. That we make him. There is no creator without a created being. We're not talking about form that is not dressed in matter. Yes, Itzik.
I wanted to ask, I can think to myself how, you know, how to think of a friend or someone who's precious to me, how to put thought into it. But what does it mean to think of something between us? What is between us?
Forget between us. But that between us you'll feel the moment that it's born. Just think about the friends, that you depend on them and that's it. They take you and they lead you to the right place. Yes. Well?
Can you hear me? In the book Vayikra, Leviticus, I think it is written there, you should not go and spy upon your own people and love your friends as yourself. What does it mean?
Bring everyone to love.
What does it mean to not go after, hunt them, or spy after them? That means bringing them to love?
Yes, bring everyone to love in the end. So,
Rav, should I concentrate internally on my relationship with someone who I reject internally, who I'm repulsed by?
האם להתרכז פנימית ביחסים עם מישהו שאני נדחה ממנו פנימית?
לא.
No.
לא ולא.
No.
לא כדאי.
It's not worthwhile. We should just try to feel everyone equally. There are people who are closer to me according to spirit, according to the way I feel them. There are those who are further away. There are people who are more closed in, people who are more open, more pleasant that you can start a connection with. It's all according to my nature. That's how it is with respect to me. I don't really see them. I see the way that they appear towards me. But in the end, I have to yearn to be with everyone in the same attitude, the same relation. Well, only Amikam is left. You as well, okay?
This allegory of Baal Sulam, I really like these allegories because they...
And they speak about food.
Yes. And I must say that once it was used to be very much a lot simpler.
It used to be simpler?
Yeah, there was this allegory.
You're talking about previous lives.
No, not that yet, but still within the time frame that I'm familiar with. It happens that you eat some food, some meal, and let's say it's tastier, it's sweet or something. In the meantime, you taste an olive in order to feel the actual plate.
Yes, certainly. Otherwise, you won't feel. That's certainly what you have to do. Ask the right chefs. They put it in the foods already, in the dishes. I spoke to them once and they taught me. It's not that I know how to cook or something, but that's what they do. Within the dish, there has to be that breaking, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
It becomes an accurate science, you know, when that taste influences that taste and so on.
You know, because you have to have that combination of the lines there.
Right, but here he puts me in anxiety because he talks about...
Well, without the will to receive, you'll never be able to enjoy because you have to feel something that is opposite it. And then through that gap between them and the connection of the two of them, you feel the flavor, the taste.
But here, he turns the work into the main thing. This is the place of the taste, that working in that area of the palace is where he puts the powder.
But he puts the foods there, the dishes.
No, but he says that he puts a different powder on the food, that only if you work in this place, then you feel taste in the meal, and this already confuses me.
So we don't think that way. We think it's simple. We think that the delicacies have this powder on them, and this powder can be very tasty, or it can be not tasty, according to the way you prepare yourself. That's it.
So what is that place where, you know, there's this sit and eat, and it's a tasty meal, and they put a gun to your head?
And you don't taste it as tasty, right? You taste it as bad.
Unless I work in that place.
I don't know if it's this place or not. I mean,
this is what he writes.
Well, just understand it the way you see fit. I mean, there's no this place or that place. Yes.
What is the thing that prevents a person most from leaving Egypt?
The support of the group, and the people of Israel cried from the world. That's how it should be. You see, Moses ran away from Egypt to Jethro, and he came back. You don't run out of Egypt by yourself. Can't. You have to come out with the entire nation, the whole, all of the people. What does it mean? With all of the your coarseness, all that you have. It's impossible to do it any other way.
How do I know that it's correct support?
When they hold you in a state of responsibility, that you have to think about everyone, that everybody together must reach spiritual ascent, mutual bestowal, in other words.
Caring for their spirituality?
Again?
The question is whether I have to care for their spirituality, that's what it means?
You care for their spirituality by increasing, amplifying the greatness of the goal in their eyes. Certainly.
So it turns out that it's more the issue of setting an example, giving an example?
An example, certainly.
No,
American. Well, Mr. American.
I wanted to ask about anything but leave from the beginning of the lesson.
Is it
correct to say that a person leaves because he comes and then he puts an effort and puts an effort and never feels anything of what you speak?
האם נכון להגיד שאדם יוצא כתוצאה מזה שהוא מגיע, משקיע מאמצים, משקיע מאמצים, אבל אף פעם לא מרגיש דבר ממה שאתה מדבר עליו?
Not you, but in general.
לא אתה, אלא בכללות. זאת אומרת, אדם משקיע מאמצים ולא מרגיש כלום, ואז בסוף הוא הולך. האם זה יכול להיות סיבה לזה שאדם יוצא?
One might be investing efforts and not receiving what he is thinking, and therefore he leaves. It might be that he's not investing at all, but that as well depends on the group. If we see that people are leaving, almost in all cases, it is our fault. Almost always. Except if a person, you know, reached here, fell to us almost by mistake, and it's forbidden for us to think about that way about everyone. We shouldn't. Rather, we need to explain to them more and maybe draw them, pull them into some sort of engagements that are more suitable for them, you know, give them something. There's nothing you can do about it. That is the work. The work is, well, let's go ahead and study the Zohar.